Okay, good afternoon. I want to start first with a bit of an update on cyclones Renee in Tonga and Pat in the Cook. So Cyclone Renee is a Category 4 cyclone, hit the Vavau group of islands in Tonga this morning. The Harapai group was affected around lunchtime. It's forecast that the capital of Nuku'alofa will be affected this evening. The New Zealand government is monitoring the situation closely. We are talking to the Tongan government, as well as our partners Australia and France, about the best use of our collective resources in planning for a possible response. Cyclone Renee is bringing very destructive hurricane force winds, heavy rains and damaging sea swells. Indications are that the likely damage in Tonga could be significant. Power and communications are currently down in parts of Tonga, so getting an assessment of the damage will be difficult in the early stages of this event. New Zealanders in Tonga are advised to follow any instructions issued by the local authorities and monitor the media to keep up to date on the situation. New Zealanders in Tonga should register their details on the Safe Travel website, www.safetravel.govt.nz, if they can. Those with immediate plans to travel to Tonga should contact their travel agents, as flights may be disrupted by the cyclone. Our High Commission in Tonga estimates there are around 300 New Zealanders in Tonga at the moment. In relation to Cyclone Pat, an Air Force Hercules is being dispatched to the Cook Islands carrying reef supplies such as tarpaulins, water containers, tents and chainsaw packs. Defence personnel are also on board to assist with the clean-up operation on Atataki. The last advice we have is that the flight was due to leave for Nilpai for Rarotonga at 3:45 this afternoon. The flight will stop in Rarotonga to collect further pre-positioned supplies, as well as supplies already dispatched on commercial flights. The Hercules is due to travel between Atataki and Rarotonga from tomorrow morning as required. The New Zealand government has made an initial contribution of $200,000 for relief and recovery efforts in the Cook Islands, and the government will continue to work with the authorities in the Cook Islands to decide how we can best support ongoing recovery efforts. In terms of ministerial activity, the government has quite a busy week this week, as I'm sure many of you are aware. In terms of my own activity, I'm in Wellington until Thursday morning, and I'll visit Rotorua for a variety of events. I'll be going to Te Puia to visit the Ka Waharoa, or Memorial Entranceway, which is destined for the New Zealand Pavilion at the Shanghai Expo. The Waharoa is nearly complete, and the Chinese ambassador and I will be each carving a small design under the guidance of Te Puia master carver, of course. On Friday, I'm on a regional visit to the Hawke's Bay, where I'll be launching Art Deco weekend on Friday night. I've seen pictures of what I'll be wearing, and look like I could be well suited for a barbershop quartet. Tomorrow, the Justice Minister, Simon Power, will announce further details on the format of the referendum on MMP, which will be held in 2011. He'll also announce the government's reform package for the electoral finance laws. On Thursday, Mr. Power, wearing his communist hat, will announce the government's action plan for responding to the Capital Market Development Task Force 60 recommendations. As part of that, as I've already mentioned in the last day and in my speech last week, we are developing the idea of an international finance hub where we would host the mid and back office facilities of international funds that would be registered here in New Zealand. They'd be offshore funds managed in other countries, but the reason why New Zealand could be a very attractive place to host such facilities is because of our very stable government and predictable legal system. More work is obviously still to be done in this area, which is why it's very much in its infancy, but obviously we are very interested in advancing it. Finance Minister Bill English will give a speech in Auckland on Thursday. He'll explain why New Zealand needs to lift its game economically and cover aspects of the government's economic program for 2010, including our thinking around important initiatives such as tax reform and infrastructure investment. In other business, the expanded animal welfare bill was signed off by Cabinet today and will be introduced to the House on Thursday. The bill incorporates Simon Bridges' bill and also encompasses other animal welfare issues. Agricultural Minister David Carter will be going into greater detail about the bill later in the week. As to the House, when the House resumes tomorrow, it's the government's intention to make progress on the debate on the Prime Minister's statement and other bills on the order paper. It is anticipated that the debate on the Prime Minister's statement will conclude on Wednesday. The committee stages of the Children, Young Persons and Their Families Amendment Bill will be given priority on Wednesday. Other bills the government is looking to progress include the Financial Services Providers Pre-Implementation Adjustments First Reading, the Education Amendment Bill Second Reading, the Unit Titles Bill Second Reading, Judicial Matters and Infrastructure Bill Second Reading.
When will Cabinet consider the Whanau Ora report?
Don't know yet.
Any time frame at all?
Don't know.
Who is Whanau Ora aimed at helping?
Well, it's aimed at helping families that are in receipt, or individuals, but primarily families, that are in receipt of significant forms of government support already, often coming from a variety of agencies.
Taliana Turiera is saying that specifically Māori. What do you say?
Well, I spelled that very clearly in my speech last week, and I said before, our policy is based on need, not race, and that's the way it'll be implemented.
So she's incorrect in her understanding that it's focused on Māori?
As I said, we said that last week in our speech. I've said it to you before, and that's the situation. In discussions I've had with her, she hasn't raised any concerns about the recipients of Whanau Ora being anyone based in need. And in fact, quite logically, they would be. There may be a fusion of Pacific Māori families, Pākehā families, it's whoever needs it.
She says that she hasn't raised it up until now because she always thought that non-Māori will be included at a later stage. Your comments that I've mentioned, that's what you meant. She does seem surprised and negotiating for her position, which is Māori only at the moment. You know, what's your response to that?
Well, our position is based, the policy would be rolled out on the basis of need and not race.
But Mrs. Turiera has developed the policy and it's very much on a Māori model, I mean, even the delivery mechanism through iwi and whānau.
Well, those that want to go on the program have to opt into it, and certainly part of the ethos of Whanau Ora is an understanding and acknowledgement of a Māori way of doing things. Not everyone will want to do that, but in the end, any family that wants to have access to Whanau Ora, if they're in part of the provider's sphere of jurisdiction or area, they'll be able to do so.
So do you expect many Pākehā families to pick it up, and could you, from your understanding of it,
I think they will actually, yes. And the reason for that is that what we've been currently doing isn't working, and I think we need to acknowledge that. For a lot of families, they're getting specific siloed support from the government, but actually they need a more holistic approach. I think given Whanau Ora will ultimately probably work with a third, a third head of armed assistance provider. That provider will be able to do a lot of different things and help that particular family. And so I think the policy is as effective as we hope it will be. I think there will be quite a lot of Pākehā families that will want to do that.
Which non-Māori providers do you imagine would be interested in it?
We haven't looked at the providers.
Salvation Army or Barnardo's or something like that?
Don't know. We haven't looked at the providers.
When did you inform the Māori Party that you'd be expanding this to be all New Zealanders? Because in its early... In its early development, it really was, we talked about it as Māori only, I saw some of the documents. So when was it that you said to her, look, this is going to go nationwide to all New Zealand?
For quite some time.
Dr. Sharples has said that, if the government was courageous, then they would happily stand up and say, it's for Māori, that's where the problems are. What's your response to that? Are you being courageous in the way that you're going to implement this policy?
Not all the families in need are Māori. Now, he's right that a significant number of them are, and we acknowledge that in the statistics, but at the end of the day, not all of them are Māori, and we're a government that wants to provide support to New Zealanders that are in need.
I suppose one concern from the Māori Party is that money may be diluted, or if it's an appropriation or the funding, if it's not targeted at Māori, then it's spread out and loses its effectiveness.
Yeah, I reject that view.
Isn't that the point, though, following on from that question, that while 15% of the population are half the prison population, and they're overrepresented in every other negative statistic in good name, isn't that, that's why we're looking at this new approach? So doesn't it mean that it should be tailored for Māori?
No. What it means is probably what we're doing at the moment isn't working very effectively. We need to change that, and there could be a better way of delivering those social services and that support for those families. I think that's why there's been so much agreement between the Māori Party and the National Party about the need to take a new look and a new way of doing things. I don't think it'll be applicable for every family, and nor would every provider want to take up the kinds of services and obligations the Whānau Ora program would deliver, but I think some will. And at the end of the day, you know, I have no doubt that a large number of families that will want to go on the Whānau Ora program will be Māori, but not all of them.
And what did the Māori Party say to you when you said you'd be expanding it? Do they have a problem with it?
No.
Discussions?
No.
The initial estimates were maybe $1 billion would be carved off, if you like, from the general consolidated funding spending to that program. Is that the sort of magnitude you're still looking at?
Look, I think it depends enormously on how you measure things. In its early stage, that's clearly not possible in the first instance, and that's because the program needs to grow and needs to be established and needs to be proved actually in the field. It's one thing to have a design and a view, it's another thing to have a program rolled out. It certainly depends on how you measure it. So it depends on whether you measure the number of providers, the number of families, how much money is specifically going to other support services that whānau or providers may give those families, or whether you're talking about the total welfare entitlements that family might have in those contracts that might be consolidated. So it's one of the issues where it's very difficult even for us up front to tell you exactly what those numbers will look like in day one. But I think it is fair to say, like any program that's new, it has to be rolled in on a phased basis, and we've been having those discussions with the Māori Party.
So would that mean it's piloted in some of those areas that are already doing this? Because Whānau Ora is not exactly that new. There's like the Wellington Trust, certainly in the East Coast, and places there aren't as trusts already doing it. Would you roll it out on a very small scale initially in those things?
Well, we're working through that, but I think to say that it's not new is not correct. I think you're right, Waipāraura Trust, as an example, does provide some consolidated services, but not in the way that is envisaged through Whānau Ora.
So why is this different? Can you explain how it's different to what's happening already?
Well, at the moment, welfare is provided to families or individuals on a siloed basis by contract based on need. It doesn't measure outputs on a generalised basis, and it doesn't measure the kinds of outputs we're looking at. For instance, there's a whole range of different outputs we might want to collectively put together as the assessment tool when we looked at the success or otherwise of a whānau or a provider. And they could be everything from vaccinations to early childhood attendance, all the way through to, you know, whether the family's getting on its feet, whether youngsters are staying at school, what their truancy is like. There's a whole range. And what happens at the moment is we deliver contracts based on the individual need of a specific area funded by a vote. So health might put in some money, maybe housing does something in another case, maybe MSD does something else. We're looking at potentially collapsing contracts and saying, here are all of the outcomes, let's measure against that. So it doesn't duplicate the money that's going in there. You either get one thing or the other, but it's the flexibility within the contract.
So new money, do you expect new money?
There'll be some new money. There'll be some new money in the budget.
You're talking about obligations on the providers as well.
Yeah.
So what presumably if they don't measure up and lift X number of people out of this negative situation, then they could potentially lose the contract, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, New Zealanders won't want us to fund providers unless they can actually prove that this new way of doing things is delivering better results. If it's not, we shouldn't carry on with it. Now, am I confident they can do that? The answer is absolutely, I think they can. I think there is the need for flexibility. There's also an enormous amount of bureaucracy. If you go and talk to a Waipāraura Trust, I think they've got, you have to ask John, but I think they've got something in the order of 70-odd contracts. I mean, there's a lot of different silos. It costs them an awful lot of money. Now, can we consolidate that and make life better for them? It's very much along the lines of what we're doing with schools, which is the high-trust, low-bureaucracy model for proven providers.
Will the funding be split off, though? I mean, obviously, for example, in health, there'll be money spent on Māori, or, you know, will that, you know, be split off in terms of appropriations, or how will that work?
We're working through those negotiations at the moment, so I don't want to prejudge that. But, yeah, I mean, clearly, there needs to be funding, and there needs to be access.
What feedback are you getting from departments, social welfare and health and so on, about whether they're happy to lose the funding or any concerns they've got over the ability of these community groups to actually put in place the right systems and accountabilities?
Yeah, actually, the ministers, because there's quite a number of ministers that have been involved in this from our side, have been very supportive and acknowledge actually the current system's not working well. So you can imagine right across from, all the way from health right through to, as I say, social development. There is an acknowledgement that the current system is inflexible. And I mean, I guess the way I look at it is it's a little bit like a water bed. You know, if you push down on one side, you know, if you don't address the problems, you know, it's going to rise on the other side. And that's the issue, isn't it? That we're sort of throwing some money at one bit, and if we don't fix the other bits, the first bit you're spending money at is completely wasted. So we need to get a better holistic approach.
What would be your best explanation then of whānau ora if people are sitting at home listening to this? How would you describe it?
Well, whānau ora is a way of saying we're going to measure outcomes as opposed to just inputs into a family. And if that means consolidating the current payments that go into a family to give greater flexibility to a third-party provider and to get better results for New Zealanders, then I think they should support it. Because they can see from the stats that are out there today what we're doing isn't working.
Are you going to talk to Mrs. Currier at all about the way, the differences between the way you and she are describing the same policy?
There's ongoing discussions, and there has been for quite some time.
Will you change the name to Family Aura then to make it a little bit more
fun? Well, I mean, I, you know, Whānau Aura means family wellbeing, and, you know, I think you can use whatever terminology you like, but to me, it's based on that.
You talking to her today about it?
Not today, but I have been, and I've sent her back some correspondence today. So, yeah, there's ongoing discussions.
When will you release the task force report that came out last week?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, we're working our way through the practical implementation of Whānau Ora with the Māori Party, and I think it may make a little more sense to have that all buttoned down before we actually release the report. What I can tell you, having read the task force report, is like any task force, there are some things we agree with and some things we don't. And the task force has had a set of objectives, and that's fine, but it's no different from the tax working group. They also recommended a capital gains tax, a land tax, and RFRN. And much to the disappointment of some of you in the room, we rejected those.
You said he had correspondence with Tariana Turia today. What was it about? Was it about this issue?
I was just working through the implementation of Whānau Ora.
Was she
how you operationalise it.
So you rang her?
I don't know. I was just working on a bit of correspondence.
As long as some of the, as the policy becomes more of a reality, you know, what happened with the closing gap, a backlash from, you know, other New Zealanders who might see this as preferential treatment?
Well, there's no preferential treatment in Whānau Ora. There's a different way of doing things and acknowledgement that what we currently do doesn't work. But the National Party has, for as long as I've been involved in the National Party, been a party that believes in policies based on need, not race, and that's where we intend to end up.
So you think this still fits with the one law for all?
It does. I think New Zealanders would look at, amongst other things, the $7.6 billion we spend on social welfare and argue some of the things we're doing is not working and they want different outcomes.
Do you think the America's Cut is now looking to go back to multi-challenger syndicates? Would your government consider putting money towards Team New Zealand in the way the last Labor government did?
We might do. There's been an appropriation there that's been sitting around, obviously, pending the court case. No final decision's been made on that, of course.
When would Cabinet consider it again?
Don't know the answer. I mean, that would be subject to a request for a bid. And obviously, I want to congratulate the New Zealanders involved in the regatta. Certainly those on BMW Oracle will be very happy to have won.
Just on the response to the hurricane, there was an Aotearoa MP who's criticising New Zealand, says we should have provided equipment.
Sorry, who guy was criticising?
A guy, Keena Bishop in Aotearoa.
Oh, Aotearoa MP, yeah, okay.
Saying we should have acted more quickly on this. I mean, could we have done so?
Well, not on the advice I've had. We've been monitoring that situation. We've been doing what we could. I think from memory, I mean, I've had very regular updates from my people about it. I don't have a note, but I think there were 68 families involved. So, look, we are doing our best to respond. So there's 68 families. Damage led to some 68 families being displaced. Tourist providers are still operating. There's been limited capacities to provide meals. I mean, anybody on the ground in a situation where they're ravaged by a cyclone feels frustrated and they feel helpless, and they look to countries like New Zealand to support them, and that is the way it is. And New Zealand, I believe, will always live up to our obligations, whether it's a tsunami or a cyclone, whatever it might be. But to the best of my knowledge, we've responded appropriately.
What do you make of that New Zealand skipper of the Ada Gill who's boarded that Japanese security ship today? Tried to make the citizens arrest, gave the Japanese skipper an invoice for $3 million sinking in his boat.
Let me do diplomatic and say I've seen reports I don't have any more information than actually you have on the wire, but you know, I would just hope that calm heads prevail. I mean, having those sort of activities taking place in Antarctica is downright dangerous, and frankly, you know, we need to get a bit more information, see how this pans out.
Should be how far? The Japanese government, they were just asking to go easy down there. I mean, you send a message.
Well, I think on both sides, you know, you would want calm heads to prevail, because as the Foreign Minister has pointed out on numerous occasions, the real risk is this goes tragically wrong. And it's one thing for somebody to start scaling a boat and handing people a bill for $3 million. These people are operating in Antarctica, where if you land in the water and you're last there, for more than about 12 minutes, you'll be dead. So I don't really think it's terribly sensible, that kind of behaviour. And on either side, we just hope that we can find a resolution to this issue. I realise it's long standing.
Should the Japanese pull out now from down Antarctica?
Well, as I've said before, I believe there is a way through this over time. You know, that will require some goodwill on both sides, and I just don't know if that's possible, but that's got to be the long-term solution. The kind of antics we're seeing down on the high seas is not the way forward.
Is there any progress on those suggestions you put
forward? Not that I'm aware of at this point, but the Foreign Minister is continuing to work through it.
In the last week or so, you've had the GST issue, you've had Whanaora, where the Māori Party and the National Party seem to have slightly different understandings, or slightly, it seems to be, communication problems. Are you comfortable that the relationship is being managed well between the government and the Māori Party?
Yes, but there's got to be an acknowledgement that the Māori Party is a distinct and unique party from the National Party. Just like ACT and United Future, from time to time they'll voice strong differences of opinion. If you take the GST situation, I actually think their response has been entirely appropriate and predictable, which is to say, a big constituency of theirs is low-income New Zealanders. They've advocated strongly for them. You know, our confidence in supply agreement demands, actually, rightfully so. But when it comes to budget parameters, we will conduct negotiations with them or dialogue with them in good faith. We're doing that. But as you saw from Peter Sharpe's comments on Friday, they're not going to walk away from the coalition because we are proposing a tax plan that may or may not be their number one priority.
But there's probably a different expectations of times, it seems, and you throw in the foreshore and seabed as well, and Whanaora, where perhaps the Māori Party view is very much one thing, and they think they're going to get it, or they think they're making progress towards it, and the government comes over the top.
Yeah, well, I'd argue with you they are making tremendous progress. I mean, in the end, I'm actually still confident that foreshore and seabed will be repealed, which has been the raison d'etre of the Māori Party, and will be replaced with something that's more acceptable to them and more acceptable to all New Zealanders. I'm confident in the end, low-income New Zealanders, as a result of their support and their advocacy, will get a good deal out of the budget changes that we want to make. I'm confident that Whanaora will ultimately deliver the results for New Zealanders, both Māori and non-Māori New Zealanders. So look, in the end, in government, it doesn't matter whether you're the big dog or the little dog, you never get 100% of what you want.
But will you be meeting more frequently with them to make sure that you're both sides are really clear on what the issues are around the policy, so there's no big messages coming out?
Yeah, but smaller parties from time to time will always make statements. I can't control everything they say, nor they want me to. You know, they've got their own style of doing things. They are different to other political parties, and sometimes you just got to roll with the punches.
Do you think the concept of ownership will be present in the new
Act? I don't know, but as I acknowledged to Radio New Zealand, I think on Friday, the concept of a public domain or non-ownership is one potential solution. It's not the only one. What I can tell you is that there are quite a number of Māori leaders who have found favour with that thought.
That 40 square kilometre land area you gave in the speech last week about land use for mining, where did that number come from?
My speechwriter.
But did you get advice from a department, the MED or anything like that?
I'm sure they will have. They are very thorough in the work that they do. I'm sure that came from the ministry for either the environment or basically from resources and land and resources. But it will have been researched. I'm sure we can
recall
that.
The Greens released some figures today.
A lot of the Greens numbers are pretty dodgy.
Environment and figures presented to Parliament last year, where the Commissioner for the Environment identified 200 square kilometres in New Zealand being used for mining.
Yeah, it may well depend on how you measure it, but look, I haven't received any advice that the information in my speech was wrong, and on that basis I'm going to accept it's right because it will be well researched.
A bar owner in Fitzyanga had a bill for 55 grand from Mercury Energy.
Right.
Mercury has now withdrawn that bill on the proviso that the bar owner doesn't talk to the public. Labour says this is calling and the state and enterprises shouldn't be harassing people or trying to stop them from commenting. Do you have a problem with them sort of essentially putting a gagging clause on that contract?
Look, I just don't know any of the details of that. I can't imagine why there's such a conflict, but I can obviously try and get some information on it. As a general, we expect government departments or SOEs to act in a way which is professional. That sometimes actually can mean that there's confidentiality clauses that standard practice in the private sector. But if it's intimidation, that would be a very different deal, but I just need to get more details.
Can I just ask you about the hub?
Yeah.
Work that you specifically asked the task force to do, or was it their idea?
Well, success has many fathers, doesn't it? So let's depend on how it goes. But I think the truth is that it's a combination of both. I mean, I've been talking about it for a long time since I came back to New Zealand, obviously because of my experience in Ireland. But that's equally true that the Capital Markets Task Force was littered with people who have experience in this area and seen how successful it's been. So I think we probably should say it's a meeting of the minds.
The effects of Afghanistan over the weekend, yep. Can you help with New Zealand
sales? Yeah, I can confirm that New Zealand wasn't involved. Okay, thanks very much.